This is Steve Sherlock with another Franklin Matters radio show, number 667 in the series. This session of the radio show shares the Franklin Mass School Committee meeting held on Tuesday, November 23rd, 2021. The meeting was conducted in a hybrid format. School committee members were in the municipal building along with some of the public. Other members of the public joined via conference bridge, all to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. The recording of the public meeting runs just over 2 hours and 15 minutes. School committees entered executive session and returned approximately 45 minutes later to the public meeting for about 1 minute before closing the meeting. I split the meeting into two audio segments. First covers the opening superintendent's report and the MCAS presentation, about 1 hour and 7 minutes. Part two covers the discussion action items, discussion only items, the consent agenda through to the executive session. I leave out the 45 minute break, but do include the 1 minute when they come back with the FEA memorandum of understanding before closing the meeting. That runs about 1 hour and 8 minutes. Links to the meeting agenda and associated documents released for this meeting are included in the show notes. The links to my notes taken during the meeting are also provided. So let's listen to this segment of the school committee meeting, November 23rd, 2021.
The time being 7 o'clock, I call to order the November 23rd, 2021 Franklin School Committee meeting. Meetings are recorded by Franklin TV and shown on Comcast Channel 11 and Verizon Channel 29. Any individual who also wishes to record this meeting must obtain explicit permission from the chair. Members of the public are now welcome to attend committee meetings in person. Additionally, in an effort to ensure citizen engagement, citizens will be able to continue to access the public meeting using Zoom. We will use the Zoom webinar feature. You may access the meeting with the link or phone numbers. Participants wishing to speak during the citizens' comments portion of the agenda will be able to raise their hand to be recognized by the chair. The webinar host will invite the attendee to unmute for comment. Okay, so at this time, I would like to introduce our school committee pledge student, Ella DiStefano. She's grade 8 at Remington Middle School, if you wanted to come up. Ella is a kind, supportive, and reliable student who has garnered the respect of her teachers and peers throughout her time at Remington Middle School. She has been selected as a World of Difference peer leader, where she will work to make RMS more inclusive and accepting of all students. Additionally, she has been selected as the Project 351 Ambassador for Franklin for the 2021-2022 school year. Project 351's ambassadors are selected for an exemplary ethic of service and the values of kindness, compassion, humility, and gratitude. Ella embodies these values, and we are so excited to support this year of transformational leadership. Thank you very much, Ella. So if we could all rise, and Ella, would you mind leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
As is customary, we will pause for a moment of silence. Thank you. Ella, I'm sure you and your family have somewhere to be other than here, so you're welcome to go. Thank you so very much for coming out. Have a lovely long weekend with your family.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
Thank you.
Okay. Routine business, review of agenda. Does the agenda look all right to everybody? Questions, comments, nothing? All right. Citizens' comments. Do we have anyone in the audience or on Zoom who would like to participate in citizens' comments? Give the participants a minute. All right. 3, 2, 1. All right. So I guess we will move over to the superintendent's report.
Thank you. So we don't have student representatives here with us this evening. I imagine that it being Tuesday before Thanksgiving with no school tomorrow has had a little bit of an impact on their schedules and will be traveling or such. Which is good. I have a couple of things to share with the committee, and I jotted a few notes down to try to capture some of the things that are going on at the high school that the students may have shared. One of the things that I want to note is that I had the pleasure of attending Mamma Mia, the theater performance that occurred over the weekend between the last school committee meeting and now, and they did such an outstanding job, and I know a lot of people in the community had shared what an excellent performance they did with Mamma Mia. So congratulations and kudos to the cast, crew, and our theater director and our music orchestra director for the music in the pit. Want to be sure that we give our congratulations to our fall athletic teams. They had an amazing run. The playoffs are over, but we do still have one more football game on Thursday at home against King Philip. So we're still cheering the Panthers on through fall sports. Spring sports start on Monday, November 30th. They had a pep rally today to show support to Franklin High School, and I know that they highlighted teams. They did also highlight the theater company and robotics. Robotics had a really strong competition out at WPI a couple of weeks ago and won the Savage Soccer Championship there. Mr. Hanna sent a nice thank you note, Thanksgiving note out to the Franklin High School community to note some of the positives that are happening at the school. He had unfortunately had to send a few notes out previously around vandalism and behavior, but with some positive things to note in terms of some corrections and changes that have been happening up there. So we wanted to be sure to share that with the community. I know there have been some concerns expressed in other venues, but certainly the students are rising to expectations that are being shared with them through class meetings and through their work with teachers. Following up from the last school committee meeting, just wanted to feed back to you a little bit of information about parent-teacher conferences. So by all accounts, I think that they were really positive. And there was an interesting trend in terms of attendance. For younger students at the elementary, most parent-teacher conferences were held in person, with a minority of those conferences held in a virtual environment. That shifted a little bit at the middle level. It was still mostly in person, but it seemed that there was a higher percentage of virtual, with about a third to one half of the conferences going virtual at the middle level. And then at Franklin High School, the majority of conferences were held in a virtual environment. So it really had I don't have strict numbers from every single school, but generally did a little dipsticking with our principals and found out the trend. We'll have a second round of conferences for elementary schools only, and that will be in March. I want to be sure to acknowledge what a remarkable event we had through the Substance Abuse Task Force last week. I really want to extend our most sincere gratitude and thanks to the SAFE Coalition, a number of their board of directors, and their executive director, Jen Knight Levine, were part of a panel along with some school officials, and really shared some excellent information about mental health and substance abuse trends among children and teens in the community. So thank you to Representative Jeff Roy, Detective Mike Kalecki, Dan Lagarce, who is a community member working with SAFE, Dr. Wendy Cohen, Principal Josh Hanna, Jim Derrick, Jen Knight Levine. That was a panel moderated by Ann Bergen, and I do want to be sure to acknowledge our administrators, Lucas Jagir, Assistant Superintendent, and Paula Morano, Director of Student Services, for shepherding the efforts for the substance abuse panel. They talked about the current trends and shared great information. They hosted the Hidden in Plain Sight bedroom, where people can walk through and try to identify what can often be common things that look very typical, but are actually related to substance use. There was a discussion, of course, about the intersection of mental health and substance abuse. We talked about our more therapeutic disciplinary practices, and some positives there, and the partnership with SAFE that we have, and some suggestions for starting the conversation with children. All told, there were probably something like 80 people in attendance between in-person and the online environment. The event was recorded by Franklin TV. It is currently being edited, and information will be shared with the broader community when it's available, and we'll publish that. And lastly, tonight, I wanted to share, again, following up from the last school committee meeting, and I may share it again with the students here at the next meeting, but the role of the student representatives to school committee. Per state law, Massachusetts requires student representatives to sit on local school committees. They are ex officio, non-voting members of the committee. They don't have a right to attend executive sessions unless the right is explicitly granted to them by the school committee. So I think that that may help make distinction related to comments. Their comments wouldn't fold under citizens' comments. They're speaking as student representatives to the committee. Student representatives are typically from the high school student government. Our four high school student representatives are officers from among the junior and senior classes. We formerly just had seniors serving, but 2 years ago we started the process of having juniors and seniors so that there was a bit of consistency and continuity, and they can serve for up to 2 years. So that's a little bit of information for you about our student reps.
Thank you, Dr. Hearn. I'll go down the line. Any questions or comments? Camille? Dave?
No.
Al?
No questions here. Thank you.
Dave?
I would just like to echo what you said. So regarding the critical conversations forum, it was fantastic. Thank you so much, Lucas, for all the work you did with that, and for all the panelists. It was very informative. Thank you.
Yes, and I'll echo that. It was so informative, and I sat there as a 100% anxious parent with like my heart in my throat the whole time. But it was, I learned a lot, and some things were validated as far as my parenting practices, which was nice. And I feel like we're just so lucky to have that, the SAFE resource here in this community. It's just really amazing. I also want to say Mamma Mia was so fun. It was like a party, and we, for a while, thought maybe we'd never see live theater again, and that was really sad, and it just felt like normalcy and fun, and the costumes were astounding, and the music, all of the above. It was amazing, so kudos to everybody who worked so hard to put that together. This is sort of relevant, I think, to your comment about Mr. Hanna's message to the community. So DESE announced a new hate crimes prevention grant, and I'm not sure, you know, sort of the details are yet to come out, even though they're saying applications are due by Wednesday, December 8th, so it'd be nice to have some details probably before December 8th, but I don't know if that's maybe something to look into. You know, money for anything is good to look into, I think, and just to see if that's a possibility, if we can get in on that. And there's also some resources, I think some free resources attached to that, so that might be helpful too. So we know that Franklin's not the only community, unfortunately, being hit with some hate crimes, and you know, anything that I see that might offer a little bit of help or support there, I think I try to latch on to. So thank you.
May?
No comments from me.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Dr. Hearn, guests and presentations.
Great, thank you. So this evening we have a presentation, as we customarily do, although during COVID it was suspended because we didn't have MCAS in the same way in the spring of 2020. But we do have some results to share with you. Dr. Tina Rogers and Dr. Linda Ashley are here, our directors of curriculum for STEM and ELA and social studies, respectively. They'll come up to the table. Lucas is going to adjust all of the technology. And while they get settled, I will just say how grateful I am to the committee for working with us as an administrative team and thinking about ways in which to revisit the Teaching and Learning Office. I think we have a really strong partnership between Dr. Rogers and Dr. Ashley, working with me, working with Ms. Morano, working with Mr. Javier, and really focusing within specific content areas. And I think being able to go a little bit deeper and supporting principals and supporting teachers and supporting specialists. So I'm really pleased to have them here tonight presenting MCAS, putting MCAS in context too, recognizing that this is not a typical year, but we do want to get back a little bit more to normal, I think, and MCAS is part of our comprehensive assessment program. It's one measure that we look at among several. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Linda and Tina.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for having us. I'd like to reintroduce myself in my new role. So I'm Linda Ashley, previously principal at Kennedy School, and I really enjoy my new role and working with the central office staff and really realizing what a huge responsibility district work is, and just really thankful for all their support and really enjoying working with Dr. Rogers and on the STEM side of things. So Tina's going to kick off our presentation tonight.
Great to meet you all, and we're happy to be here. Thanks for having us. So we do want to preface this by saying the purpose and goal of this is to give you kind of just some overview. Am I not? Thank you. My kids would never tell me I'm not. But we want to give you an overview of trends that we're seeing in the data, and also give you and share with you some of the guidance that we're receiving from the Department of Education and Secondary Education as it relates to the pandemic, school closures, and such, and how we can use this data to move work forward in the Franklin schools. So to begin, I'm just moving forward with this.
Yes, just a few.
Okay, great. So as we all know, during the pandemic, school closure happened, and as a result, the 2020 spring MCAS did not happen. And then the spring of 21 MCAS were modified. So here are just a few bullet points to help us kind of frame the MCAS results for this school year. So the amount of time for testing was reduced. So in that, the students in grade 3 to 8, where they typically take two sessions of ELA, two sessions of math, they only took one session based on their cohort days of in-person. Some students there then took session one, others took session two, but for the high school students, they did complete two test sessions. With that, the Department of Ed did allow students who were learning remotely to have the option to test remotely. And so you can see here, we gave some numbers here. So we had 1,947 students in grades 3 to 8 test in person, and 152 decided to opt to test at home. We did, as you'll see later, have a higher percentage participation rate than other districts in the state. And the Department of Ed did release in saying that the trends throughout the state did indicate there were no real discrepancies between students who tested virtually or at home and then students who did tested in school. High school students did need to take the full test in person. So our high school participation rates were lower than the grades 3 to 8, but not by a significant percentage. Again, all grade testing windows were expanded just to allow for flexibility within districts. And here in Franklin, we did administer in May and June our assessments. This next bullet here, the ninth grade class will receive a competency determination. And basically what that means is that because they were not able to take the 2020 MCAS because it wasn't offered, the Department of Education is saying if you are offering a biology course and it fits the Massachusetts guidelines, students do not have to take the biology exam to graduate. So the students graduating in the class of 23 will receive that in science. Likewise, the students graduating in the class of 22 receive that same determination for English and math, again, because of school closure. However, everyone offered the opportunity for students to take that both for receiving the seal of biliteracy at graduation or to qualify for scholarships for college. So we did have about roughly 70 students opt to take that assessment. So with that information, the Department of Ed then really suggests looking and analyzing this data a little bit differently than we have in the past. So we've tried to highlight a few key comparisons here. So first, they're really saying use this as a diagnostic tool to improve at your local level. And in that, they did not release, typically they'll release district comparisons, and they did not do that this year. They're really saying take your local data, certainly have some comparison to the state, which you'll see within this presentation, but really use that for some local level decisions to improve teaching and learning for students, for us in Franklin schools. And then one piece that we want to draw your attention to that we'll talk about throughout the presentation is SGP, or student growth percentiles. So typically, you can see the figure on the left here is going to show typically and historically how the Department of Education has calculated student SGP. And so basically, they are looking at student groups from grade within a certain, from each grade within a certain subject, and they are that they find their mean student growth percentile, and then student distributions are pretty well flat between the first to 99th percentile to show student growth projections throughout the year. That's how they've always historically done that. And you can think about that as like bringing your kiddo to the doctor. They get weighed, their height and weight, right? They have percentiles of growth. So similarly, that's how this is calculated. So then if you look to the figure to the right, you can see there's kind of a significant difference in those bars. And so what the Department of Education wanted to do is accurately report how the educational progress and growth has been impacted as a result of COVID. So they didn't feel as though, you know, aggregating this in the same way would do justice to show what the impact on student learning and growth had, or this pandemic had on our kids. So we know that the school closures, hybrid learning, other social and emotional impacts and aspects related to this pandemic significantly impacted students' opportunity to access education and also their ability to learn. So what the Department of Ed did is take what they're calling a historical baseline groupings. So they are reporting to us, still on the same scale of 1 to 99, this historical peer group. So you can see, based on these bars, that there's a significantly higher percentage of students in lower growth percentiles, which truly depicts what happened through this pandemic. And so to kind of create a mean and kind of scale those growths up to make them equate to past practice wouldn't really do any of us justice and allow us to support students moving forward. So really they're encouraging us to use these new growth percentiles as a baseline to compare our forward progress. And so they are anticipating using this measure at least in the next year and potentially into the future years. So with that, we're going to start sharing with you some data, and then we will roll into kind of the work that we're currently working on and moving forward what we're anticipating. So I'll turn it over.
The internet cut out, so it's rebooting, okay. And there are folks online who can't hear the audio, but it's only the last few things that you said.
Should we
so we how long do you need?
I don't know, I'm trying to figure it out. We're still live on the air.
We're still live on TV.
We're live on TV.
Okay.
Yeah. Should we keep going? What? Yeah. Maybe send a note to people on the webinar.
28? Verizon 28?
You could say we're working on reconnecting to the
Verizon 29, Comcast Channel 11.
Thank you.
Yep, perfect. They can also go on the live stream on the website.
Through
Franklin TV?
Yeah.
Franklin TV or franklinmass.gov. Either one.
Okay.
All right, great. So we'll start with, I'll explain the English language arts slides and Dr. Rogers will do the math and the science. We're not going to read the bullet points. You have the presentation and there's lots of data to go over, but we're just going to go over highlights and things we're doing to address areas of need. So a high percentage of our grade 10 students met or exceeded expectations, as you can see on the graph. In English language arts, which assesses reading, language, which is conventions and vocabulary, and writing standards. And as you can see, the SGP, or student growth, was higher than the state average. As you see, the mean SGP was 58.6 for Franklin 10th graders, compared to the state at 52.5, using the metrics that Dr. Rogers explained for growth. on this slide, we can see that our continued concern about our students with high needs. There's a high achievement gap between students with high needs and students without high needs. For example, in grade 10, this gap was 42 percentage points. So on the last bullet, you could see our students with high needs met or exceeded expectations. 88% of them exceeded or met expectations, whereas our students with high needs, 46% of them met or exceeded expectations. So this is a concern that we typically have for students with high needs that has really intensified with the pandemic. A student with high needs is designated as economically disadvantaged or an English language learner. Sometimes you'll see that as an EL, or a former English learner, or a student with disabilities. We used to use the term like low income, but DESE has expanded that to economically disadvantaged to take into account. They don't want to just have to use the free and reduced lunch applications to determine income status, especially because many high-needs school districts automatically provide free breakfast and free lunches to students, so not all parents need to fill out those applications. So the metric includes the SNAP, the Nutritional Assistance Program, so students that are participating in these state programs will be designated as economically disadvantaged. Transitional Assistance for Families, DCF, Foster Care, and Mass Health. So these are our students with any one of these areas of need would be in that category. We can break these this high needs group out at the at school and district level, so we can look for our students with disabilities. We can look at our students, our English language learners. But for the presentation tonight, we didn't disaggregate all that data, but we certainly do that at the district and school level. Well, all students were impacted in the 2021 school year. The pandemic intensified many existing achievement gaps. So school teams looked at academic, social, emotional, and high needs data to bring students back to school. Remember the hybrid model? 4 days a week to maximize in-person learning. So we started at the school level with maybe 8 or 9 children to bring back in the hybrid, the A and B days. It seems like so long ago since we did that. But we tried to move more furniture, as we realized these kids really need to get back to school, we moved more furniture out of the classroom and we really tried to maximize in-person learning. So I know at the elementary level was an average of about 12 students that we could fit safely with the social distancing. So we tried to bring back students as much as we could, because we knew the critical need for in-person learning.
Right, so continuing with the high school in grade 10, shifting to math for a moment. Generally speaking, and really as we anticipated, you'll see student achievement and growth results not mirror that of ELA. So there's lower student growth and achievement levels in math based on what research is telling us, what we know about math instruction. We did anticipate some of this. There is no significant difference between students meeting and achieving in our 2019 data points to 2021. But what really caught our attention is our SGP in comparison to the state, being at 33.6% here in Franklin and compared to the state at 36.5%. So again, talking about that student growth metrics, that's one that we're keeping a close eye on and one that definitely is impacting our goals and what we're working on and what we will continue to work on. Even though DESE does claim any difference in student growth that's less than 10%, isn't really significant, we feel like we need to be doing more to increase that student growth and make sure our students are accessing grade level content. And so shifting to, again, the high needs, this is where we do mirror in math the ELA results, in that our students with high needs, you can see from 2019 to 2020, the partially meeting, that orange bar there, jumps up about 12%. And so that's kind of a key point that we want to hone in on, and we are disaggregating at the high school level, and then you'll see at the middle and elementary as well, to really identify
where, who those students are, what we can do to support those students and such. A couple highlights of this data, I would say, is one trend that we thought we would see is in the students not meeting expectations, that red bar actually declined from 2019 to 21, which is not something that we really did anticipate. And likewise, the students exceeding expectations increased. So again, we were kind of projecting a downward trend across the meeting and exceeding. So that was kind of a glow there, and we're digging into, you know, what is happening or what happened there that we can leverage and move forward. And so we'll transition into our 3 to 8 grade span.
Okay, so the ELA data for grades 3 to 8 shows a higher number of students are meeting or exceeding expectations than the state by quite a big margin. And also, as Tina mentioned, in the area of math, if you look at the student growth, however, our student growth is a point lower in comparison.
Recording in progress.
So that is something that we, even though the graphs are looking pretty similar, that growth is still something that that we, draws our attention and that we work towards. In grades 3 to 8, the ELA achievement for our high need students, once again, we have a very wide achievement gap between our students with high needs meeting or exceeding
recording in progress
standards expectations. It's a 40-point discrepancy here, with 33% of our students with high needs meeting or exceeding expectations versus students without high needs at 73%. While we don't see a large change in student achievement from 2019 to 21, we of course work hard to figure out where these achievement gaps are. So digging down into the grade level, the classroom level, and then to the student level to see where interventions and other supports need to happen.
All right, and then transitioning back to math with the 3 to 8, kind of in line with what we saw in grade 10 again. There is a decrease in our students who are meeting and exceeding expectations from prior years to current years. And again, that increase in students who are partially meeting, which I think is a huge portion of students that, you know, we're really digging into. Again, I want to say to really, you know, to highlight the students who are, to understand where students are specific to content standards, but also is this across, other subgroups of students and such. And so we're really doing that in-depth digging at the levels of department heads and teachers. Again, here you can see our mean in comparison to the state. We're right on point. We're like a tenth of a point off in differential, but again, we can do better, right? So we're looking to really compare that in years going forward and to see that student growth increasing. And we'll get to the work that we're doing within the schools to move that forward. Again, high needs, no surprise here. It's consistent with what we've shown you in the other avenues. Here I would note that our students that are partially meeting, again, you can see that orange bar are pretty consistent, right? We're like 50% of kiddos, but what we didn't anticipate in grade 10, which we didn't see here in grade 3 to 8, we do, is that our students not meeting expectations increased by 10%. 10 percentage points there, and our exceeding declined from the prior years. And then lastly, we just want to highlight some STE. So STE, we do not get growth projections in science, technology, engineering assessments. The test is given in 5th grade and in 8th grade. With a 3-year lag, the Department of Education does not determine growth through that 3 years. We also don't get growth determination in the first year, so we wouldn't get it in 5th grade anyhow. So our results for our science, technology, engineering in 5th grade and 8th grade are pretty consistent from prior years to this year. I will say that, you know, at all academic levels, they're drilling down again into the content-specific standards to identify priority standards that were a struggle on the MCAS, to really highlight those in the classroom within units as teaching and learning is happening. So with that, we'll transition to some areas of strength
and growth, and then talk about what's happening now.
So we highlighted a few areas of strength, that some of them we pulled from the other slides, and some of them we looked at some other data points from other reports. But our high participation rate in MCAS, as you saw maybe on some of the other slides, the state might have been at 90%, 92%, but we did have a very high participation rate across grade levels and content areas, from between 95 to 100% of our students participating in the MCAS. One area to look at is we also had, like for grade 10 in ELA, 79% of grade 10 students met or exceeded expectations in ELA, and the state was at 64%. So our grade 10 students in ELA was quite a highlight of the testing, of our testing data. So we are using the strengths that we find within our MCAS data to really look to see what is happening at those grade levels in the areas of curriculum and the areas of instruction. So looking, for example, at our grade 8 data, where we have 24% higher than the state average, like what is going on in grade 8 ELA classrooms that we can really encourage and foster and really disseminate and have the teachers. I know some of the teachers, we're hoping those will be presenting at some upcoming professional development that we have, but really looking and seeing what's happening in those classrooms that we can expand upon in other courses and other grade levels. So the areas for growth, we talked a little bit, but here are some things that really have stood out to all of us who have been really digging into the data. The achievement gaps with our students and with high needs across all our subgroups. The concerns that we knew we were going to have, we typically have, but we're very concerned now because we have large gaps to reduce. So special education teachers, EL teachers, administrators, curriculum specialists, all of us really are the collaboration. I think that's one thing from the pandemic. We all spent a lot of time with each other virtually and in person, but really there's a very collaborative, just a real desire to really dig in and figure out how to get kids back up to grade level. So I think that's something that we're all really harnessing all those efforts. So Tina and I will start now just talking a little bit about some of the ways that we're addressing our areas for growth across grade levels and subject areas. And one framework that we're implementing throughout the district is called a multi-tiered systems of support. This is a multi-year process, and it's a framework designed by, I don't know if it was designed by DESE, but DESE is promoting it across the state, and we're digging in to use it as well, Franklinize it probably a little bit. But it really is to ensure that all students, higher achieving students, lower achieving students, receive a high quality education. MTSS includes identifying and addressing the strengths and needs of all students through assessments for both social emotional needs, behavioral needs, and academic needs. We're utilizing data decision making and progress monitoring to determine the supports and strategies with increasing intensity. So when we think about the tiers, we have tier one, that's classroom instruction, then we have tier two and tier three, and the amount of supports and scaffolding increases to meet the needs of students. And students aren't in those tiers, so it's not like you're a tier two student or tier three student. It's a very important designation, but everybody gets a solid tier one foundation, and then you might come in and out of tiers depending on your needs at that point. You might have more needs in geometry and you really need some tier three, or you might have lesser needs, you might be in tier two in certain things, but it's really a fluid tier systems of supports that's very different than our intervention models in the past. A really student focused versus we're meeting kids' needs versus fitting them into a structure that we've already set in place. One of the tools that we have introduced this year is our NWEA map assessments that you heard probably a little bit last year. We started piloting it in the spring, but we did a full implementation in grades K-8 in the fall. It was our first administration, and that's really helping us, in addition to MCAS scores and all other district assessments, unit assessments. It's really helping us to really see where students' math and reading skills fall in comparison to national norms. Some examples of MTSS in action in our schools. I'll start with elementary and kind of work our way up. But in elementary, the literacy and the math specialists, you've heard a lot from them because they're fantastic. They meet with our interventionists, and we used to have one interventionist per school. So thank you to the school committee for supporting increased interventionists because they're working really hard with our students. But they're planning just-in-time supports to help students access grade level curriculum and also to support them in and outside of the classroom to increase their skills to get them up to grade level. At the middle school, teachers are identifying prerequisite skills, so they're doing some pre-testing. Tina's been working with the math department at the middle school, and they're assessing where kids are before they begin a unit in math, and to see, okay, where are we? Where are kids, and where do we need to adjust our instruction to meet the needs? They might need to do a little bit of scaffolding, a little bit of review, a little bit of different kinds of teaching, depending on where kids, because kids might be at a different place than they are typically. In the area of social emotional learning, we are using a variety of screening tools to see where our students are functioning with SEL. At elementary school, students are learning both direct instruction, and they're also learning within the classroom community. Really, that classroom climate is so important. As kids came back to school, we realized that our SEL strategies were more important than ever. So SEL strategies are both directly taught by classroom teachers, and they're also embedded throughout lessons throughout the day. Some of the course partner work happening at the high school to address students' needs. The English department, as one example, is working on standardizing and aligning their assessments, which are opportunities to really collect student performance data against the standards and adjust their practices. They've been working during the Wednesday department meeting times. Principal Hannah has really done a big focus on course partner work and collaboration. They're also aligning, the English department's working to align their grading practices within grade level teams. The high school math department is aligning their grading practices and making common assessments and working on collaborative unit planning. The science department, working alongside Tina, is working to bring more authentic learning experiences to classroom lessons. And this is something that really comes out of the SEL learning that we've all been doing, is the really authentic experiences for kids is really critical to their motivation and success. So for example, the chemistry department is working on kitchen chemistry and also environmental chemistry, which is very motivating to students.
Sure. So I'll move into the collaboration structures. One thing that we know is that we can't get more time, and right, that time is so valuable to us. So what we're really trying to ensure is any planning structure, collaboration structures that we have, be it middle, elementary, high school, in the early ECDC, we're trying to make sure that that time is most efficiently and effectively used. So for just some examples, we're linking a lot of this collaboration structures to this MTSS multi-tiered system of supports to ensure that we are planning with a focus on student learning. So just as an example, we're implementing illustrative math. We know that we have some more significant achievement gaps and growth gaps in mathematics than we do there. So thankfully, we are trying to put this guaranteed viable curriculum in place and making sure that we're using that time with teachers to support their understanding, to support their questions, to analyze student work, to understand the arc of learning, the potential, the standards that came before that maybe students didn't have an opportunity to learn because of school closure and such. And so we're really making sure that we're focusing in on that trajectory of learning as they progress through. So that's just one example of how we're trying to leverage those collaboration structures to align with this MTSS model, learning acceleration, and identify and support those areas of growth that we've identified. Similarly with professional development, we've done a lot of work around professional development this year. We're really excited about the work we're doing, along with ensuring that all teachers have access to professional development with any curriculum or resources or social emotional aspects that we put in place. We're trying to ensure that that training happens, right? So for example, Illustrative Math again, the NWEA map assessment tool, we're ensuring that folks are, everyone, that all educators are trained and have an understanding and the ability to dig in and understand that data. Keys to literacy is another aspect that we're just trying to ensure that at the base that all of our educators have that same core foundational training, just like we want our kiddos to have that tier one firm understanding, right? And then we're also really trying to elevate teacher voice, and that's what we've heard from teachers, is there's so many great strengths, so many great things happening. So how are we leveraging that and elevating that teacher voice? And so just recently in November 2nd, we had a multitude of educators facilitate some PD sessions in the afternoon. Folks got to choose their sessions in the afternoon, but the really great response we got from the survey results is we already have 85 educators after that one session saying, hey, I'm willing to share some of my expertise and knowledge with my colleagues. So that's one way that we're trying to really grow those areas of strength. And with that, really just like we want to provide students with choice in the classroom, we want to provide teachers with choice too. So we worked on November 2nd, and we're working more deeply for the next January PD day to really have teachers build their own learning experience. So what is it that I need to ensure that I'm, you know, providing the best educational opportunities, social emotional opportunities for my students, and really allowing them to choose kind of from a menu of options that are within, you know, our district initiatives and goals. So we're really excited about that work that's happening as well, and I would say all of this is encompassed within our district initiative goals, but also this idea of MTSS and learning acceleration. So with that, I will end just with, this was not in your packet because we had to finalize this, but we can share it with, we all want to finalize it with principals and get feedback, but these are the dates that are published for MCAS for the 22 spring dates, and communication will be going out to families soon with these dates. So at that point concludes our presentation. And
yeah. Thank you both very much. I'll go through the committee. Any questions or comments? Camille?
I have a couple. On slide 3, mm-hmm. where you showed us how they stopped doing the 20% all the way up,
yes.
And then they...
right here.
Is that Franklin?
These two graphs? No.
Those
are the Department of Ed. Yes.
And my second thing was just a comment that I just want to praise the elevating of teacher voice and choice in professional development, because that's honoring teachers as professionals, knowing what they need, knowing their strengths, and replicating what they have to do in the classroom, which is differentiate. So thank you very much.
David?
But first, thank you so much for the presentation. And a couple of things. One, I love the talk about identifying some of the bright spots that we had and really kind of replicating that and sussing out why did certain ones, such as the 8th grade, do exceptionally well and how we can kind of really replicate that across the district. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what this will be next year, once we have, you know, like a full year of more normal schools under our belt. You know, does Franklin just instantly rebound with all the, you know, just the work of, you know, from the district, the administrators, the faculty, and then the teachers that are working tirelessly to bring everybody back up. I have one question. In terms of the participation rate, I know it's exceptional throughout all the ranks. Do you know, was there a decline in the participation rate from last year than from previous years historically?
Yes.
There was.
Yes. So our high school participation rate was around 95%, and I think we're typically around 99-100% participation. And then grades 3 to 8 is where we saw the steady between 27 and 100%, 100% being just one grade level in one test. But yes, across the board, it was a decline.
Okay, thank you very much.
Al?
So thank you for the time. Definitely a great presentation, because I jotted down a question and then you'd answer it before I had a chance to answer it. So, but I do have a few questions. At the beginning, you had mentioned grades 3 to 8 had a difference. Some did session one, some did session two.
Yeah.
Did you notice a difference between the students that did each session? What was that compared?
So the Department of Ed actually, I will say that I did not, I don't have a printout of the kids who took one session to another. We get the distribution of all students. But the way they distribute the standards that they assess were evenly distributed between the two. So based on that data and the data both remote and in person, the Department of Ed said that we shouldn't be comparing students to students for those reasons. And we're not comparing districts to districts for those reasons, but we can generalize the data to make curriculum-related decisions, district decisions. But there was no substantial difference between those.
Cool, thank you. Then also, you'd mentioned NWEA MAP. What does that stand for?
MAP, what does NWEA stand for?
It's the company. NWEA is the company.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I'm just like drawing a blank on.
MAP is Measurement of Academic Progress.
Yes.
So the MAP growth will give us growth indicators as we continue to assess.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Thank you. And then I love that the educators are facilitating the sessions. Could we find out for January, like, how many educators are asking or are actually leading a session and what sessions they're leading? It'd be interesting to see what people are wanting to share with their colleagues and then kind of help elevate them that way.
Yeah.
We had quite a wide variety during November. The brave souls who decided just to anything from author studies to digital tools to cooking with Google, just a wide variety, and really you could tell really where their interests and their passions lie, which is really important.
Yes,
so
I would also say we surveyed the teachers after that November 2nd experience to hear about what was positive, what worked, what would they hope for, and what would they like to see moving forward, in addition to what Tina and Linda mentioned around would they be willing to facilitate. So combining all that information, and we've been working with the DLIs on the logistical end to kind of implement and plan that. So I just share that as an addition to what's been said about that.
Yeah, so it would be great just to see this grow and have more educators put their hands up and get to the point of the problem is that you have too many people asking to train their peers. So definitely great there. And then the last thing, I don't know if we can add it for a future presentation, but maybe more in-depth presentation about MTSS, just to see what the day in the life looks like. So that's it.
Thank you. Yeah, through you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much. Doctors Rogers and Ash, this is so informative for us to see, and it's great that we have this data to understand student achievement throughout this past year. I have a couple questions. So these trends that we're observing in the MCAS test scores, are we also seeing those in other academic performance metrics, whether they be GPAs or individual course grades? Are we seeing similar trends along those lines?
Well, I can speak to the MAP piece of it too. So we are seeing some trends. So really when we're digging into some of those data points, we're digging in at a much deeper level than an overarching. So we are seeing some similar trends. I'll just give you an example. In MAP, we're seeing some multi-digit computational gaps in students from grades 3, and then that will kind of work their way up to their
you know, working with equations and inequalities and such. So we are seeing those gaps, and then we're specifically identifying those when we're doing some unit planning. But we have not done a cross analysis of student GPA specifically as it relates to MCAS. So that's something that we can dig into a little deeper.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, that, I mean, I think, you know, anything and everything we can do to really understand just the depth to which the pandemic has impacted our students' performance and education, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, thank you for that. And in terms of the percentages of not meeting or meeting expectations, exceeding expectations, not meeting those, do we have expected trends before we got this data, given the pandemic, and how did those trends compare? I mean, of course, we knew the pandemic was going to be very disruptive, so like I totally understand if there wasn't really any particular expectations, but I'm just curious if there were any, and how the results compared to any expectations, if there were some.
I think we were reading research during the pandemic from across the United States. We were concerned about math. In particular, Tina and I have talked a lot about this and done some digging in, but in the Marriott Math in particular, sometimes it was virtual, learning math virtually was challenging. Mm. The lack of manipulatives, the lack of hands-on modeling, immediate feedback. Math is very procedural, and you know, learning's maybe more specifics. In the home environment, we did predict that. We saw that in the classroom. We saw that math was an area of concern, maybe more than ELA, and I think that the data shows that. That's one example.
Yeah, no, that absolutely makes sense. Okay, that's great that we're able to monitor that and keep that in mind. Lastly, it seems like one of the main areas of concern is particularly the achievement gaps between students with and without high needs. You mentioned that. You both mentioned that in several different instances, and it makes sense that it's absolutely concerning. Thank you for pointing out what constitutes a student with high needs, because that was something very good for clarifying. And then, of course, you mentioned how a few of those things that go into that are related to certain socioeconomic factors. But I'm curious, first off, in terms of these populations of students with high needs, do we see other overlaps, other social or demographic factors, or other patterns that of how maybe students, of how certain student populations might be affected more so than others that that just we should be monitoring, aware of?
Yeah, so we have monitored other specific subgroups. For the purpose of this meeting, we wanted to try to kind of encapsulate most of it in that overarching group, but we do some digging into some other subgroups and see some similar trends. So if we just delineate out our students, our English learners or former English learners, we see similar patterns to that. Similarly to students with disabilities, we see some significant some similar patterns, I should say, as well as to our students of color. Similarly, we have similar trends there, but again, we didn't want to report out every single subgroup that we have, but trends are consistent.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, that makes sense. And just lastly, so I know you mentioned the multi-tiered systems of support. That sounds like a fantastic strategy for addressing these needs. So I'm just curious. So do we have strategies specifically for addressing these students with high needs in terms of their specified areas of need and trying to help them get back on track? Is it mostly through the multi-tiered systems of support, or are there other avenues that are being utilized to assist them?
So when we look at our EL students, for instance, we have our English language teachers pushing into classrooms, supporting our students, our English learners, our former English learners still maybe not providing some direct services, but monitoring them, maybe checking in consultations with teachers, making sure that they're achieving, do they need any extra, do they need any supports in the vocabulary, any pre-teaching, things like that. And of course, our students with IEPs are being instructed and provided with modifications and supports as needed. For students that are struggling but maybe are not in high needs subgroup, that's where MTSS really comes into play. Just making sure that we're screening for those students. So that's why we're using like the MAP data and other data, finding, trying to be proactive and find kids and be proactively trying to boost up through tiered supports, making sure we have solid tier one and then tier two, some pushing in. So interventionists might go into the classroom to provide some extra reading support. If students need a little bit more, the reading specialist might take them and pull out into small groups to provide extra, we call it like a double dose of phonics support and things like that. So it's not just our students with high needs or in a subgroup, we're also monitoring students that might not be designated, but to make sure that we're not missing anybody and that we're not falling through the cracks. That's what we said.
Excellent, thank you so much.
Can I jump in and just add one additional resource, and that would be Title I. So we talked about interventionists, and we're funding interventionists through ESSER, but the Title I schools have additional personnel through the Title I grant. And that would be Parmenter and Keller. Title I is allocated based on socioeconomics, and so it's related to the economically disadvantaged numbers. And so there's additional English and math support, particularly in grades K through 2, so kind of early on, to ready students that may manifest in MCAS later on. But just wanted to add that one as well.
Thank you. Elise?
Yeah. I'm so glad you're here tonight. Thank you so much for this presentation. And just to remind everybody here and at home that these positions are new to Franklin Public Schools since July, and we're just so glad to have you here. So this was a position of an assistant superintendent. It was Dr. Edwards. And then we as she retired, we split the position into two new people and sort of had a STEM side and an ELA side. And it was budget neutral for you budget people who are interested. And I think, you know, I was definitely hopeful that it would work. And I just, seeing you here sitting, talking together, very familiar with each other's area of expertise, talking about your collaboration, talking about social emotional learning and how that sort of worked within all the academic lessons and content, and really describing MTSS, which is not just for academics, as you mentioned, but also for social emotional and behavior. And it really, I guess I was hoping that you wouldn't be siloed into, oh, there's a STEM person over there and an ELA person over there. It's like really the collaboration I can see it happening here and hearing it through your examples and just the way you sort of talk to each other and for each other. And I just really appreciate your work and your collaboration and sort of having the big picture and not just keeping your blinders on just for your area of expertise, because I'm sure that's your favorite, but really working. For the best of all of the Franklin School community, and just very much appreciate it. And do look forward to hearing more about MAP as we go forward and get more data on that. Is that anticipated? When do you think we'll be able to talk about that at school committee meeting?
I think it'll be forthcoming sooner rather than later. We're still learning. We're still doing a lot of learning, and we don't really have growth measures yet because we really had our first implementation or first assessment with all students in the fall. So we need a couple, we need at least one more to show some growth numbers, but at least a couple for students to get familiar with the assessment as well, because it's an adaptive test, which we cannot get into at some point. Mm-hmm. But students have not typically taken adaptive assessments in the past. So we have some learning to do, but yes, certainly we'll bring that information forward.
January is the next administration.
Okay.
So January will be administering MAPDOL during the month of January, and then again, get in the later spring. So we're looking forward to January. Well, February, we have data meetings already set up to start like digging in and geeking out on all those numbers.
That's exciting. Well, we can share in your geeking out whenever you're ready. No rush. Don't push it to us too early, but once you have stuff to talk about, it'll be great to see. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Great presentation. Echo really what Elise said. I feel you feel the same way. And it's great to see you again, too. That's all I have. Thank
you. So I just wanted to highlight, too, what Elise just said, the importance of having both an ELA and STEM curriculum director. I think that it's evident in all the hard work that you've done just over the past few months that you've been with us. And I look forward to seeing more over the next several months. I did have just a couple of questions. Well, first a comment. I love that there was no real discrepancy between the home and the VLA. I thought that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. That's great to hear. Mass assessments, just took care of. I did have just a kind of a clarifying question. So for those of us who aren't really in the know, you've mentioned scaffolding and just-in-time supports. Could you maybe go into a little bit of detail on what those are? Or what scaffolding means, just-in-time support.
So scaffolding is just, you think about providing a child with support as they're learning to walk. You know, first you like you're holding them up, and then they start to walk a little, and you gradually let them go a little bit. So it's really that gradual. We used to call it like gradual release of responsibility, and now we're calling it scaffolds. But providing students what they need in order for them to access the grade level curriculum or the curriculum where they're functioning the best. So it's really providing supports. Maybe it's pre-teaching, maybe it's a little bit more review. Some kids might need more practice. Some kids might need to learn in a different way with more multi-sensory learning, more hands-on. So it's providing those structures to help students access the curriculum. So that's scaffolds. You want to do just in time?
Sure. The just in time piece is to say all students deserve access to their grade level content. And so when students have gap in learning, you know, if we think about, I'll use a math example, right? So if we think about a student having some gaps maybe in their understanding of fractions, maybe they have some gaps in their understanding of their spatial reasoning, but right now we're in a fractions unit, we're gonna provide those scaffolds or that just-in-time remediation and support as we're learning fractions, and we're not gonna do that spatial reasoning right now. So we're not gonna kind of front load to try to say, we're gonna teach all of these learning or, you know, these learning gaps that exist, we're gonna do them just in time as we're learning grade level and accessing grade level content.
It really helps to make sure that students aren't stuck in review, in a review mode, or if you're performing a grade level below in reading, how are you going to get caught up if you're not accessing the grade level curriculum and the rich vocabulary, the rich literature? So it's really making sure that we're providing all students, high need students, students with special needs, access to that grade level content in order so they aren't just stuck in, you know, they might be making progress, but they're not going to catch up.
Perfect, thank you very much. That's it. So thank you very much for coming in.
I
really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina. And NWEA stands for Northwest Evaluation Association.
Yep. Thank you.
It's a nonprofit group out of Oregon.
I'll never remember that. No. It's like a mental block.
I knew about fractions because I had to hear about it for half an hour last night. And we had to argue back and forth about it, so.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.